Coming up on November 2nd, there is a option levy to continue with a five-year option on the current levy that is happening for Western Lane Ambulance District. And to get a little bit more perspective on that, I've got Larry Farnsworth in here, who's a former board member of the Western Lane Ambulance District. And on the current budget committee, R.J. Pilcher is here this morning. And this is a pretty significant thing, but it's for a five-year term. Tell me a little bit about the levy itself before we get into some of the details of what's going on with the levy.
Okay. Well, the district has two different taxes that they charge us on our property tax bills. So they have a permanent levy, and then they have the five-year levy. And they used to only have the permanent levy. And then a few years ago, they added this extra five-year levy. And it's $5.4 million. And so the district, unlike a private ambulance service, believes that they need this to offer service in our community. We dispute that. We believe that the private entrepreneurial-based ambulance service, which runs like all small businesses in town, like you would run your business, George, like I run my business, when you're looking at efficiencies, you're not going to operate the way the government does. So we don't believe that they need the operating levy if they were to run this ambulance service in a fiscally responsible manner.
Now, the original levy that's on there, the one you said we had two taxations there, is that strictly for Western Lane Ambulance?
They're both strictly for Western
Lane. Okay, so they're both. One's not partial, and no. Then the district gets some of it?
No, no. There's the Western Lane Ambulance District was originally part of our hospital system.
Right.
And the hospital system had a health taxing district. And when the hospital was acquired by the sisters, they were no longer eligible for that tax subsidy. So they spun off the ambulance service, which they didn't want to run. And it remains the sole remaining entity in that tax district. So the levy, the five-year levy, is in addition to that.
Now, my understanding is when you first got on the board, you guys started looking at obviously the operating of the system to see how it worked. And you noticed some discrepancies when you first started looking at it. Is that correct?
Oh, sure. And the same thing for RJ here. He's on the budget committee. So when I ran for office, I was just looking for an opportunity to provide public service, fill my civic duty. We're volunteers. We aren't paid. I love Florence, love the community, wanted to serve. So I ran for election, and my platform was I was here to represent taxpayers. So I ran for office, and once I was in office, I started to look more deeply into the financials. Now, there's been a sad history here. We had a director that passed away. So we had a transition in leadership, but we also had a sad history of inaccurate financials. And it took a few years for us to even get an idea how deep the hole was that we were digging.
How many years were there inaccuracies that you could see?
Well, RJ, do you remember? I think our audited financial reports had several restatements. So what happened is when we looked at the financials, the lists of expenses and that sort of thing weren't even in the right categories in the books. So they were using QuickBooks at the time, and it was such a mess they had to hire a local CPA each month to unwind their finances and try and get it back to good reporting. One thing we can say about the current business office is that they have squared that away with the assistance of CPAs. They've done a great job of getting the expenses in the right categories and the revenues in the right categories. So we've had an ever increasingly more accurate picture of the financial condition of the district.
When you looked at it, though, there wasn't necessarily malfeasance. It was more of a stuff in the wrong place and not accurately reported.
No malfeasance, thank heavens. But what we did find is that we were losing money every year. We were losing money and losing lots of money.
And this is with a levy and then the option levy in place.
With both in place. In fact, we've had four chiefs you know, in a short period of time. But during the time that each of these chiefs was in place, they would decry the fact that it seemed like the collective bargaining agreement, the labor agreement between the paramedics and EMTs and the district was far too rich for the revenue that we were taking in. And that includes billed patient revenue. So the district operates by billing you and I for our ambulance rides. They bill our insurance, Medicare, Medicaid, private pay. But they're also billing us twice on our property taxes. So you're paying three times for an ambulance ride. Now, I have with me some budget forecasts. And, George, I know your listeners can't see this, but you can see the red line is the chief's forecast of where this district is going in comparison to its revenues.
And when was this graph put together?
A year and a half ago.
A year and a half ago.
Right. And this is after, you know, restatements of our finances, looking back at past years. You'll recall that one of the statements that the chief published, I can read this to you. One second here.
So what this shows, and I'll tell the folks here, like by the year 2029, it shows total revenue under the current operation is going to be just above $4 million. And the current revenue and expenses, according to this graph, is at $7 million.
Right.
So we're about, you know, $2.8 million away from where we need to be in order to break even.
Right.
Okay.
Now, this is the chief's analysis. This is his financial analysis. He prepared this and gave it to all the directors and made this statement in the 2020-2021 budget message. Quote, "We believe that the district's financial future to be questionable. Expenses over the last few years have been increasing annually at a much higher rate than our revenues. It is essential that the district take a multifaceted approach to solve these financial issues by decreasing costs and increasing revenue." And then he further stated regarding the labor agreement, "It is the position of the district that the current contracted wages and benefits are not sustainable when using long-term financial projections. It is our sincere hope that the union will work with the district in identifying cuts in the budget that will lead to the long-term survival for Western Lane Ambulance District." So my goal as a director and all the directors was to find a way to correct this listing ship, if possible. Now, I don't share that optimism that it can be fixed, which is why our group is proposing that we move forward with moving towards privatization, because we believe the privatization model can provide the same level of service or better and can do so without creating greater losses and expenses that taxpayers will have to pick up.
Now, having a conversation with the proponents of the levy, they said that over the last 2 years there's been a surplus and not a negative. Tell me if that's accurate based on your information or RJ?
If I can interject there, the audited financial year end of 2019 showed an audited loss of $151,586. For 2020, it was a loss of $221,228. Now, this is audited, and this is an audit that the board certified and accepted. So what this reflects is a portion of the PERS unfunded liability. The auditor has to take a look at that unfunded liability that the district owns.
So that's included in those numbers there.
Right.
Okay.
A portion of that is they have to lay that in there. And so that has been one of my gripes all along on the budget committee, is that the board isn't projecting what is actually happening. They're saying they may...
So they're looking at it without the PERS effect in there.
Correct.
And showing that because of that, there is a surplus, because everybody in the governmental thing has to pay PERS. Is that kind of the way?
That's true. And so let's talk about PERS for a second, George. You know, the New York Times identified the Oregon PERS program as one of the worst managed retirement programs in the United States.
We're familiar with that. Look, listening to the news on a regular basis.
Yeah, for sure.
PERS is not doing too well.
Right. So when we look back at the situation that we have in the district, 74% of those receiving retirement benefits from PERS have already retired from Western Lane Ambulance District. So we're paying for the mismanagement of this program in the past, not just by the state agency, but by our own district. You know, if you're going to have employees retire, you better be setting aside the funds you need to cover those benefits. You better have a plan. Well, we had no plan. And that's why our unfunded liability, something we actually owe, has climbed to $3.4 million. So what's happening is we are borrowing on the taxpayer's credit. Sooner or later, Salem's going to figure out how to tax us to cover that $3.4 million. And it grows every year. The sad thing is that these districts don't even take minor steps to mitigate that PERS liability. For example, our district picks up the 6% employee contribution on PERS. Our district allows paramedics and EMTs to apply a portion of their sick leave to supercharge their PERS benefit. They can do the same thing by taking vacation pay instead of vacation time off. So there's small steps here. When you add to the fact that we have an egregious overtime scheduling model, what we're doing is we are really increasing the amount we're going to owe when the state decides that we have to pay it. And of course, the state's in this up to their eyeballs. You know, they'll say, let's use a 7% rate of return when they only realize 1%. Or they might say, let's amortize this over 20 years. And when that's not good enough, they'll say, well, let's make it 22 years. So they kick the can down the road repeatedly, but it's all going to come back on taxpayers.
Well, that would be my question is, okay, if they continually kick it down the road, you know, how far are they willing to kick it down? I guess we don't know the answer to that question. I mean, it could, at any time, they could say, hey, we're done. Let's call in our note, right?
Is that what I'm... Right. And I spoke to the executive director of the PERS program here in the state of Oregon 3 years ago. And he said, this is a terrible problem with a big overhang. It's going to keep going until 2047. It's an unsustainable program. Now, private ambulance service doesn't participate in the PERS program. So taxpayers here who are currently paying two property taxes on their property tax bill are going to pay again someday when the state of Oregon says, you know what, it's time to pay the piper.
Either that or leave the retired people unfunded.
And that would be a shame.
That would be definitely a shame after the years of service.
That would be horrible. Yeah.
So as far as the budget committee goes, RJ, what kind of things were you all sitting down and discussing as you looked at some of the different aspects of the budget? What were you seeing that was needed room for improvement or was just outright bad?
Well, one of the things was the capital replacement needs. For 2 years, the figures that were brought forward, once I crunched the numbers, I found that they really didn't reflect reality.
And you're talking about like for purchasing new equipment, purchasing upgraded vehicles or whatever?
For ambulances, yeah. For computer equipment, phone systems, you know, any capital improvement. So on this last year, the chief brought forward the capital replacements need chart, and it showed that by fiscal year 2030, the district would be at a balance of $49,000. And right now, or for fiscal year ended 21, is $837,000. So what's happening is, you know, we aren't funding the capital replacement fund annually to keep up with the needs.
Yeah.
You know, once I crunched the numbers and put the information that was given to me by the chief and put it into a spreadsheet, putting in an annual interest rate of 0.1%, which was about what you could get, I found that by fiscal year 2030, we would be at a negative $18. So in a nine-year period of time, we're buying down our fund to where it's not sustainable. So what the model shows is that the district would put in $120,000 a year to fund the program, where the average need is $212,000. So that was one of the areas that kind of made me crazy, is that we aren't looking to the future, and we aren't putting the money in now to be able to do that. It seems that the board would rather have a $300,000 what they like to call a profit on the books, instead of showing what's really happening and actually putting the money where it needs to go. Another issue that always got to me was the overtime. In fact, the current year that we're in right now, of the non-grant-funded salaries, 18.8% of that is overtime.
Do you have a roundabout dollar figure? I mean, because I know people hear percentages, but if they had like a dollar amount, that might give them a sense of.
Okay, so the total non-grant salaries that are budgeted with overtime is $1,713,742.
And that's annually?
That's for this year, 2021-22 fiscal year, starting this last July 1 through coming June 30. So the overtime that is budgeted is $322,030. So that's 18% of that total salary is overtime. And it all goes back to the union contract that they have. Now, this last year, they had an opportunity to make some inroads. The board didn't have the fortitude to do anything about it. The only thing that they got was no cost of living increases for these last year and this year, but the step raises continued. So the idea that there was a wage freeze by the union out of their goodness and heart, that doesn't look accurate to me.
So let me just add something here, George. I've got the two budgets right here in front of me, the 2020-2021 and the 2021-2022. The chief has been touting in the press that they had a wage freeze this year. If they had a wage freeze, why did total payroll go from $1,504,000 to $1,713,000? That's a huge increase. That's because all they agreed to was a cost of living freeze. They still got all their regular step increases, and they kept the same egregious overtime model they've had in the past. Here's the problem. If there's a shift that's open, whether it's due to vacation, sick leave, training, you name it, it has to be filled in the first four positions by somebody who's already got their 40 hours this week. So everything happens at time and a half at this district. That's how the overtime cost gets exacerbated. Management doesn't have the right to bring in the extra employee on reserve or to use a part-timer
They fill those four.
Exactly right.
But logically, though, any one of those four or all four can say, no, I've had enough this week, right?
That's true.
There may not be likely to say
that's
that.
That's true, There are 12 paramedics and three supervisors. They're all eligible for overtime. So they're going to fill the shift, and it's going to be filled with somebody making overtime. Now, if you're a small business in Florence, would you run your business this way? I don't think so. you know, I mean,
well, just finding enough help to fill the shifts would be hard enough
right.
in Florence.
When you look at the pay scales, now the average paramedic in the state of Oregon makes $45,000 across the state.
And is that on a private base or is that on?
That's the scale we have from the state of Oregon. Okay, it's a survey. In the case of the Western Lane ambulance paramedics, they start at $62,000 a year. Okay, and they get to $82,000 a year in just six steps. Now, a private ambulance service pays well. They start their paramedics up here in Newport, Depot Bay, down south of us in North Bend, Coos Bay. They start their paramedics at $48,000, which is above the state average. And in 13 years, they get to $76,000. That's still a great wage. I know this. I have a relative that's a paramedic. He's never made the kind of money that these guys make right here in Florence. We have the highest paid paramedics in the state.
Now, they would say, because when I spoke with them, they would say they used a model in Portland of another, you know, government entity. That said, they were right in line with mm-hmm. with those. But you're saying that just because they're right in line with another government entity doesn't mean that they have a reasonable amount? Is that what you're
right,
saying?
Right. They're way overcompensated. And this was the opinion of the last four chiefs we had. Every one of the last four chiefs would have told you, yes, these guys are way over market. But they're not just over market in their salary. They're over market with the way their overtime is scheduled. And then you have to look at their benefit package. You know, the day they start on the property, they start accruing a full month of vacation. Not a week like most of us. You know, a week for the first 5 years, 2 weeks for the next five. No, no, you start off right now, you're going to get a month of vacation. They have a Cadillac-style health plan. Now, that health plan, any one of us would be envious of. It's a great health plan. And it has very low co-pays and deductibles. And we pay, taxpayers pay, for that health plan. We only charge the employee 10% of the premium for himself and or his family. Now, it has low co-pays and deductibles, but that's not enough. No, we give each paramedic either $1,500 if they're single or $3,000 if they have family members to cover their co-pays and deductibles. Now, you tell me where you can find that in Florence.
Now, does that money go to them whether or not they use it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
They don't have to have any justification. Most of them put it in investment savings accounts.
So at the end of the year, if they have no medical issues or no needs, that money just goes into their savings
goes
or
right into
wherever.
Their pocket, yeah. They get a cell phone stipend. Many of them don't even live in our district. So you could call them. How would they respond quickly if we had an emergency? They get gym club memberships.
Well, now, when you say many of them, I kind of like to, I'd rather, can you break that down into a number that live outside the district? Because when people hear that, they just, well, how many is many, you know?
Might be half.
Half?
Yeah, I don't have those numbers. You know, as a board of directors, we felt strongly that if you're going to earn it here, you ought to spend it here. The private ambulance.
Well, obviously, the response time is,
right.
is important whether you're
it
in the
is.
District or not.
It is. And, you know, I'm not complaining about response time here. I'm just saying that, generally speaking, if you look at the pay and benefit package, the chief will tell you that a regular paramedic fully burdened with the benefits that they're receiving and their salary is $150,000 a year.
That's considering their insurance, the money they use for copay and stuff
vacations,
like that.
Vacations, sick leave, yeah, you name it. The three supervisors. We have three supervisors. Each one of them supervises four or five other employees. They don't have any budget authority. They don't hire or fire. They didn't used to do performance reviews. They're just line supervisors, each earning $122,000 a year. Fully burdened, that's way over $200,000 a year. Now, when you think about it, $122,000 a year, when the chief, Michael Schick, was hired, he wasn't even making that. Their boss, Matt House, doesn't make that much today. Yet we have these three supervisors that don't even have half the responsibility of their management are making more than they are. So when you look around Florence, you've got the police chief, Tom Turner. He makes $117,000. You have Commander Pitcher, who does have hiring and firing authority, who does supervise all the police officers, and who, with our as our public safety people, they're putting their lives on the line for us. He makes $96,000 a year. Anywhere you look in our town, you will not find wages and bennies that are so rich that have shown up here in this district simply through contract creep. Each contract renewal, the union's been able to get one more thing, just one more thing. And the past boards of directors have been complicit.
I'm speaking with R.J. Pilcher and Larry Farnsworth. We're going to take a quick break because we got more to talk about here as we talk about the levy that's coming up on November 2nd.